This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashrin Johan. The Human Resource Minister, Stephen Sim, has announced that the government will review the minimum wage this year in accordance with the National Wages Consultative Council Act 2011. The question is, what should the new minimum wage be? How much should it increase from the current 1,500 ringgit? Joining me on the show to discuss this are Alex Ong, labour rights activist and Malaysian coordinator of Migrant Care, as well as Sivaranjani Manikam, National Workers Bureau coordinator of Parti Socialist Malaysia. Jani, Alex, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, Sarara.
So let's start with an overview. What are your thoughts on the government's announcement that the minimum wage will be reviewed and increased this year?
Yeah, as you know, the minimum wage order, it says like a 2 years once, must review the wages, the amount. But the biggest problem will be like the timeline, you know, the review timeline. Because every time the review will delay and the implementation will be delayed more. Right. So historically, that is what happening. So we really hope actually the review will take on time, and then the new minimum wage can be implemented by 1st May 2024. So that's the spirit we are expecting, because, you know, right, every time the review started, there will be a lot of pushback from MEF and then cabinet, and all these things need to be decided in the parliament. So we hope the timeline will be followed.
Yes, actually, I do agree with my sister over there, because the routine every 2 year revision is already in the agenda of the National Wage Council, and then there should not be any reason to push back it anymore. But in this particular situation, we are more interested on the well-being of the working class people, whether this particular review will actually, what we call, accommodate the current price hike in everything in our daily life. Because in the past, right, we do see about the most is about 2 to 3% increment, which is actually insignificant if we compare to the current, what we call the price hike in almost everything. For example, if we see like in China, you buy 12 pieces of egg with its equivalent of 10 ringgit, over in China, you are able to get 25 eggs, but in Malaysia, probably you are able to get 12 only. So these are actually a very challenging situation in meeting the well-being of our working class people. On the other hand, is actually whether this minimum wage itself and also the progressive wage program, is it going to benefit the migrant worker who are actually always at the bottom? And then if you look carefully, that actually in the migrant workers, what we call statistic itself, we have about close to 2 million people. That is not including the irregular migrant who is actually consistently facing the exploitation, being the lowest wage earner in Malaysia.
So the big question, what should the new minimum wage be?
Okay, before we answer to that question, you know, government have their own formula.
Right.
How they will come up with this figure called like minimum wage, but they always never follow that figure. That because at the end of the day, the political will of the government will decide, you know, the minimum wage. So according to the formula, like they will taken into consideration of the poverty line income, the average workers per household, median wage, and productivity, all these things. So the government should come out with something like 2,444 if they want to come up with the national minimum wage. But if, let's say, they go like by urban or rural, they can still can be differ, where urban, they might get about 2,500 plus. And then for rural, it will go about 1,800. So this is based on their formula, which they will never follow their formula also. But anyway, we among the PSN internally, the amount that we derive is like a 2,000 as a minimum wage. So we are not sure whether will Anwar go beyond this.
Alex, what should the new minimum wage be?
What I would say is actually, if the government want to stick to the very very low increment of the minimum wage, they should come up with some sort of progressive, I wouldn't say the progressive wage, I would say the progressive remuneration for the working class here. Because after all, the most important thing is what we call how to maintain the well-being of the worker. Let's say, for example, they want to increase, let's say, from 1,005 to 1,006 or 1,007. So there should be some form of the compensation or the subsidy to this working class in terms of their food subsidy, logistics remedy, so on and so forth. Because we have to look into the holistic, what we call, well-being of the worker rather than just look at the figure of the number. So so if they are facing the pressure from the employer on this particular matter, if we can see very clearly right now what happened to Malaysia, they increased the SST by 2%. So we can see this amount of money, where are they going to put it there? Is it going to compensate those what we call the lower segment of the society that need help? That's what I've been discussing with the National Wage Council member from Sabah. He was saying that if you tell us you are going to increase, even you give us 3,000, but it's not a livable situation, it doesn't mean anything. Most important thing is actually our well-being is taken care of. Like, for example, she did mention that our parent able to buy a house, able to buy a car, but the new graduate cannot even afford that. Probably just to pay rent, and then with their salary, it's just enough to survive with the public transport. What more to buy a house and all this time without parents' subsidy? So these are the serious thing that the reality that we have to face.
So I think you bring up an important point about why this issue needs to be tackled holistically. We've lived through 3 to 5 decades of neoliberalism and privatization, which didn't just suppress and stagnate wages, but, you know, things like housing have become increasingly unaffordable. We talk about how people in the 70s, for example, you know, if you're a teacher, professional job, if you have a single paycheck, you can afford to buy a house on that one single paycheck. These days, most people who are, you know, millennials, Gen Z, unless you come from some level of privilege, there is just simply no way you're buying a house on one paycheck, right? In most major cities, not just in Malaysia, but across the world. But we are talking about minimum wage specifically on this episode, the minimum wage review. So what should it be increased to? The current minimum wage is 1,500 ringgit.
If I were to look in the KL environment, right, mm-hmm. If you're looking at the what we call the livable wage, it's actually around 2,008. If you are looking at Kedah, probably 2,000 is good enough. If you look at Kelantan, probably 1,000 is concerned. If you ask me to recommend what is the wage like, I would say that at least 1,008 to 2,000 will be an adequate amount. Yeah. However, my emphasis is still that we need to at least to complement the subsidy for the livelihood thing, because that will actually bring to the matter. And then the other part is actually employer refused to increase, that is very normal. And then the other way to make the employer pay is through the taxation system to redistribute the wealth. Yeah, because if you look at the what we call the portion of the contribution, let's say for example, if the company make 100 ringgit, how many percent really go to the worker and how many percent go to the employer? And then from that particular difference itself, the government intervention will be actually helping out in actually like for the distribution of the wealth there. So of course, if you tell the employer, no one will want to give. But if you tax them, then they will have to pay. That is actually will actually look into the government fund distribution and all this sort of thing, that we need a very clean government to have a transparent distribution of the aid, yeah, to help this the marginal community.
So from what I can gather, yes, it's very nuanced, but roughly we are looking or hoping for the increase in minimum wage to go from 1,500 to around the ballpark of 2,000 ringgit. And this seems to be also in line with what the Consumer Association of Kedah, for example, yesterday they released a statement urging the government to boost the current minimum wage of 1,500 ringgit by at least 40% to 2,100 ringgit in the upcoming review. So I'm getting a sense of 2,000 ringgit plus minus from a lot of activists and so on and so forth. But here's the interesting thing. A Bank Negara Malaysia study has benchmarked 2,700 ringgit as a living wage for an individual. Why are we, you know, still talking about increasing it to 1,800 to 2,000 when even this, even if we increase it to 2,000 ringgit, to 2,100 ringgit, it does not get you out of that poverty, if we really want to look at life as not just surviving, but just living relatively, not luxuriously, but just somewhat comfortably without struggling too much at the end of the month, you're talking about 2,700. And this is Bank Negara Malaysia's study. How do y'all contend with this idea that the minimum wage, although we are talking about pushing it and all, and it should be pushed up, it still doesn't hit that living wage, 2,700 ringgit, 2,800 ringgit.
Yeah, but before I go to that, Saudara, I just wanted to address my friend Alex's point, like very important is like the social wage, how the government can make it like make the living condition of the workers in the country better by making their other aspect of their livelihood issues like a healthcare, the housing, how do you want to subsidize those things? Okay, so that is one point that like I really wanted to make. And then another one is like a minimum wage versus living wage.
Right.
Is our current minimum wage is up to standard of living wage? I would say no. Because imagine 1,500 is our minimum wage. And this is below than the poverty line in the country. A living wage carry a definition of like you could be able to, the salary or the wage that you earn, you can able to like consume food, house, you should able to pay for your house, you should able to pay for your healthcare, you should pay for this education. What I mean here is not a luxury. I mean, the basic things of the people should be able to manage sufficiently. And our 1,500 now, it's not definitely playing the living wage role, because many people are still live under the poverty. There should be a move to the living wage concept. And we really feel like under the Anwar government, right? Because Anwar is always talks about this hardcore poverty. He always like he will tell like we should get rid of this hardcore poverty. How do you do that? We tell you how to do that. Implement the living wage concept. Do the living wage. I think we have very good like reference on the living wage. So they just need to pick up this living wage concept, and then they need to like upgrade the salary according to the living wage. And we really hope like Anwar government should be able to do that, you know. That can give a decent life for the working class in this country.
I do agree with Jenny's perspective here. Mm-hmm. Our people need to live. However, on the other hand, I mean, being in the government itself, I think I'm also very concerned about the what we call the micro, small, medium industry sector, which is actually making up of 47.8% of contribute 47.8% of the employment opportunity. And this particular sector is having about 7.32 million people working. Yeah. So when we look into this particular situation, it's concerned, right? And then we see that a large portion of these workers, right, are actually working in agriculture, 55%. Yeah. And then we are looking at what we call the construction industry, 49%. And then about 39% working in the service. Manufacturing is 34.2%. So as a government, it is also equally important that we look into, I mean, the business need to survive. Yeah. And then the people also need to survive. They must come to a what we call equilibrium point. if you look at the what we call the current situation in what we call in Southeast Asia itself, we have seen so many factories from China, because of geopolitical problem, they moved to Vietnam, they moved to India. And then the tendency of actually of moving to the low-wage regime is part of the new liberalism of the globalization that we cannot avoid. And then on one hand, our prime minister tried to attract more direct investment, but are they the quality investment that we have? Do we have any effort to upskill our workers so that they stand up in dignity to tell the people that I deserve it because I have that skill? So the skill upgrading is very important. If you're just talking about oh, we got the self pity that we need this much, and then without enhancing the what we call the quality, the skill and productivity, that is very difficult position for our government to negotiate with the employer. If you tell the Malaysia Employer Federation, look, I am prepared to upskill those low-wage regime to earn more. Are you willing to pay? And then we do have a certain scheme that a certain level of skill has to receive a certain what we call wage range. I think that would be a better solution than just what we call and we can actually convince them that now I'm producing 100 units. After upscaling, I'm able to produce 140 units. Do I deserve that equivalent ratio of the increment of the salary? If not, then Singapore is waiting for me there. I mean, as far as this part is concerned, the dynamic of globalization and the dynamic of labor market itself will find its own equilibrium point. For example, when you mention about lower what we call minimum wage of 1,500, if you go to the currently in KL, you go to the what we call shopping mall, even the dishwasher is able, they advertise it on the board there saying that we are hiring 2,200. And then to become the what we call the cashier is how much? I think none of them is actually none of them is offered below the what we call the minimum wage. That actually is also part of the what we call labor market dynamic that actually determine where we fix at. Yeah, we must take care of the worker for their livelihood. We must also ensure that our economy also don't get stuck there. Because the stagnantization of our economy is because we are actually tied to the low-wage, labor-intensive structure. So if we are able to create the what we call the higher value added to our worker, even through the automation, they are able to become a skillful automated worker itself, they should also increase the because of their skill, they're supposed to increase the wage. One of the most important thing that happened right now, we look down upon those domestic workers. But if you look at the aging society, we do have a case actually like the domestic worker who learned to become the caretaker for the aging, yeah, for the aged people in Singapore. And over in Singapore, he earned about $350 Sing. After going, because in Singapore, they do allow the what we call the skill upgrading, where this domestic worker go every weekend, attend the class, to learn to upgrade the skill to become the caretaker. So this lady eventually got a job in Scandinavia earning roughly around 5,000 euro, which is how many pie increase. So in this particular matter itself, I think the skill upgrading is very crucial. We don't just look at the minimum wage, but we must enhance our people to be able to earn more. That should be our main target. And then we are not here to beg the government for this, but we have the particular quality that employer has to pay us. Of course, at the same time, the government has to actually work on their what we call on their social intervention to help these low-wage people to survive.
Let's go for a very quick break. On the show with me today is Alex Ong, labor rights activist and Malaysian coordinator of Migrant Care, and Sivaranjani Manikam, National Workers Bureau coordinator of Parti Socialist Malaysia. We'll continue our discussion after these messages. Keep it here on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashrin Johan, and on the show with me today is Alex Ong, labour rights activist and Malaysian coordinator of Migrant Care, and Sivaranjani Manikam, National Workers Bureau coordinator of Parti Socialist Malaysia. And on this episode, we are discussing what should the new minimum wage be. This conversation will also be available on podcasts. You can look up Beyond the Ballot Box on Spotify, the BFM app, or wherever you get your podcasts from. If you are listening to this on Spotify, do give us a follow, drop us a review. It would be really, really helpful. So, I want to broaden the conversation a little bit to look at the system as a whole. Why are wages in Malaysia so low? Because we are not just bleeding professionals, for example. It's not just, accountants and engineers and so on and so forth who are leaving to other countries, although that's important. It's not just the so-called brain drain at the top. But even, people are going to Singapore and Australia to be cleaners, to pick apples. So, if you live in Johor, that's, you can really see it in front of your eyes every single day. Thousands and thousands and thousands of Malaysians are on their motorcycles at 5 o'clock in the morning, riding into Singapore for better wages.
There's a systemic wage suppression happening in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. You see, now you have very less bargaining power among the workers. Workers cannot voice out. We need more benefits. We need more salary, and their bargaining power is so low because of the unionization in the country. Only 6% of the workers are unionized, and how many persons have the CA? That's a collective agreement. It's about 2-3% of the among the unionized workers have the CA, which they could little bit bargain to the employer. And the majority of the workers, they do not have this. So the employees always use the migrant workers as our threat to put the wages of the other workers lower. Because it's always workers can be replaceable. So this is a big issue that in Malaysia, we have a big, huge migrant workers. And that is one of the reasons I could say why the wages are always suppressed, very low. And also there is a lot of competition, for the investment. So you see now there's a biggest competition is which country is going to put their wages so low. So the investors only interested to go and venture their business opportunities in that countries, So the government is fighting to put the wages a race to the bottom, So this is how the capitalism works. So they want to maintain the wages so low so that this investors always come and then earn more money here. So we are saying we also one of the issues that we need to address here is our minimum wage in our own country will resolve the situation or not. It will not, because you see across other countries in the region. So it need to be we need to have some level of discussion on the regional level also about this. Because otherwise, every time there's a wage increment, the argument that the employer is going to come up is Malaysia will lose investment. So this argument is keep going to come out. Nevertheless, we all know that the profit, the margin profit that take away from any companies are very big. This is a known fact. We can take it as a sample, in one factory. What is the pay gap? I mean, the wage gap for the CEO and also for the normal worker, the operator. See the gap. How unequal the gap is. This is the systemic wage oppression that happening in our country. How do we deal with it? I think as a loan in Malaysia, we can't deal with it. We can't raise the wages just in Malaysia alone. We need to have some level of regional effort to look into the wages across the region so that these investors cannot run here, there, everywhere. Because wherever they go, they need to pay the same level of the wages to the workers. We need to create that kind of a difficult situation to the investors so they will be forced to invest. And investing is not only about the wage itself. There's a lot of other factors. A country's stability, political environment, it all comes as a package.
Jenny, could you elaborate on the importance of unionization? Because I think that's very important. Our unionization rate in Malaysia is, like you said, around 6%. In Denmark, for example, where people often like to bring it up as you know, how, you know, even fast food chain workers get $22 an hour and things like that, their unionization rate is around 70%, which means 70% of their workforce are part of unions. What does that signal? What's the importance of unionization?
How do you come and collectively voice up when you have a problem? It is a collective fight when you say about union, you know. It's also a systemic problem in Malaysia. You see, in 1940s, the union was really strong in Malaysia. And that time, like about 60 to 70% of the workers are unionized. And their voice is so huge. And they managed to bring like lots of like benefits to the workers in those days, you know, 1940s. But after that, what happened? The system feel like, oh, the more stronger the union, the more demand from the workers, the more threat to the capitalist system. So how do you can systematically can break that unions? So they were doing a lot of other things like a union busting. Like people are very vocal in the union. Who are these leaders? Okay, how to get rid of these leaders? And also like the law, how the law has been become like a very bureaucratic to form a union. And you see in Malaysia, of course, to form a union is very easy. You only need seven workers in a factory. But will that give you to the process of the collective agreement? No, I don't think so, because you still need to get a recognition from the employer. Employer need to recognize your union. Which employers in the world, like they will be welcoming? Oh, very good. Welcome. We really wanted the unions in our factory. Is there such employers that exist in the world? No, it's a lot of hard process. So during that process, the union will be killed off. And that's the history that we have. Now, how do we rebuild that history? Okay, that is the question, which is very critical at this moment, where the capitalist system is getting stronger and the workers' movement is getting weaker. So we are losing whatever that the benefit that we earned during our best days, like 8 hours work. Now, everybody is saying like 12 hours work is a must. If you don't agree to 12 hours work, you don't even offer an employment. So we are losing day by day whatever that we fought, you know, the betterment for the workers. Last year, I think not many workers even knows that there was a discussion when the YB Kula was here as a human resource minister. He said he want to encourage more people to unionize. So he want to do some kind of amendments to the Trade Union Act. But I don't know how many workers knows about this, because in Malaysia, we always trap into other issues like racial issues, racial discrimination, religion issues, which never bring any benefit to us. But we never think about this problem, you know, the unionization problem, which can bring a lot of benefits, you know. So this is where Malaysia is like, we are very apart now. We are talking all the non-beneficial issues and we are fighting among us. Rather than think about, okay, what are the methods can bring us together? Unionization for betterment across the board, across the race. This is the real working class fight. But we are fighting about the racial issue, religion issues, all the things in the ground. How do we advance to that level? So this is the problem that we are facing in the reality now.
When we want to fight for the change, we also must understand the mechanic of globalization. How the capital flow is not just what we call on the foreign direct investment. There are many, many ways, because capital is a very fluid commodity that fly all over the place, where you can find profit and optimization of your investment. So I would say that this is the whole situation like this. How can we benefit by creating value through the knowledge economy? As well as the same thing, like when we see how what we call the Penang electronic industry become the Silicon Valley of this Asia, did we ever take the advantage of how can we actually boost the value of our worker in the Bayan Lepas, what we call industry zone? So this is the part that actually, if we keep on talking about the low wage itself, is not enough. We have to increase we have to increase the innovation, we have to increase the productivity, we have to increase the knowledge, we have to increase the skill of our worker, which I think that that will be the fundamental way of changing the economic structure of moving up from the low-wage, labor-intensive economic structure.
So, Alex, you mentioned productivity, which I think is important. You know, we need to upskill and all of that, right? I don't think any of that is in question. But at the same time, if we look at company income before tax versus compensation of employees, which I think fundamentally it's a statistic on how greedy companies are. If you look at in the UK, the compensation for employees is 51.6%. In South Korea, it's 47.9%. In Australia, it's 47.7%. In Singapore, it's 39%, but in Malaysia, it is only 34%. So this stats show that Malaysian employees are getting the short end of the stick, that employers, the people at the top of the corporate ladders, are taking a bulk of the profits, you know, way more than in other countries. How do you see that?
I would say that it has a lot to do with our economic structure itself, because we are actually falling into the trap of the low-wage, labor-intensive economy. When you mentioned about the UK, right? Because my son is actually paying that a very handsome tax over there. So as far as this part is concerned, the change, right? We need the catalyst of change. So we must have this what we call the change itself. As I agree that with Jenny, if we don't bring about change, we are going to trap inside that particular low-wage regime. So that's why I keep on emphasizing of upgrading the skill. And also, of course, we need a livable, what we call a wage for these people to survive. And then the other part is actually like, for example, when I was actually with the one of the multinational company before, it's actually like our university graduate, are they really mentally prepared to face the what we call the reality of the corporate life or the working life? Because if you look at the misalignment of our education system, that don't really prepare them, you know, to really work. For example, you're in the IT industry, you get a computer science degree graduate. When you go into the industry, the company has to invest at least 1 to 2 years to get you used to the what we call to the system. And then, of course, there's no free lunch at all in the corporate world. It's actually how much you produce is how much you get. So as far as this is concerned, that's why I always emphasize on this, what we call the alignment of education is also as important. But when you're talking about the distribution of wealth, there's no doubt about it, we need that. In fact, if you're looking at the Indonesia Independent, without union, the harbour worker union in Australia, they actually that blocked the weaponry come in to fight the revolution in Indonesia. Indonesia is not able to achieve independence because we have the unity, solidarity of the union that blocked the Dutch weaponry coming in. So that showed that unity is strength. We need to be in solidarity. But at the same time, we also need to enhance ourselves, because the best part is actually we are able to prove the employer, other than Malaysia, other than this particular blessed land, promised land, you cannot get any better deal. That is actually the what we call the capital we can give to the government, that we have these people. If you look at the recent MITI minister was mentioning that we are short of 50,000 engineers for the electronic industry. Where are they? If they have been produced, why they go to Singapore? For example, there are so many big brands in the garment. Yeah, the biggest producer of garment is China. Second is actually Bangladesh. They produce all the top brand, but they are lowly paid. So is there innovation from our country to create the branding of ourselves to achieve that particular branding standard? For example, in Malaysia, we may have a brand called Padini. Yeah, Padini can outsource to manufacture elsewhere. But when is Padini going to be at equivalent par with the Tommy Hilfiger, with the Zara and all these things? From the employer's perspective, certainly they also have to be innovative and also productive and to evolve in this, what we call, in this marketing strategy. At the same time, from our quality, because we cannot just look at from one side, we have to look from the holistic approach, yeah? Not to find blame, but how to improve it together, and then so that we are able to achieve the common goals. Of course, I do agree that we need a livable wage to sustain our people's livelihood. At the same time, we also must motivate them to improve themselves, upskill themselves, to ensure that they can actually walk out with the what we call the open dada, you know, just telling that I deserve that pay. It's not you, give me that pay.
Let's go for another quick break. On the show with me today is Alex Ong, labour rights activist and Malaysian coordinator of Migrant Care, as well as Sivaranjani Manikam, National Workers Bureau coordinator at Parti Socialist Malaysia. We'll be back with more in a bit. Keep it here on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Darshan Johan, and on the show with me today is Alex Ong. He's a labour rights activist, also the Malaysian coordinator of Migrant Care. I also have on the show with me Sivaranjani Manikam, National Workers Bureau coordinator of Parti Socialist Malaysia. And on this episode, we are discussing what should the new minimum wage be. So, circling back to the minimum wage specifically, sometimes there is this grievance or unhappiness expressed by people in the middle class, the lower tiers of the professional class. And I'm talking about, you know, your general, you know, BFM listeners, myself, you know, people in my circle, my friends, and so on and so forth. You know, they, whenever there's discussions about minimum wage or the push to increase the minimum wage, sometimes what I hear is, you know, things like this, you know, even our salary is so low, how can you increase the minimum wage? You know, and it's, there's just so much grievance and unhappiness there. I'm wondering, how do you contend with this? How do you look at this idea of, you know, low minimum wage contributing to low wages across the board? And if we increase the minimum wage, should we see an increase in all the other wages across the board as well?
Reality is, it is not happening in that way now. You see, actually, the minimum wage increase does not provide any kind of like a wage adjustments for the like middle income people or the professional class or any other class. It is not. And there is no anywhere in the law or in the system that it is automatically wage adjustment is happening. When the time we address about the minimum wage, which we really wanted to address about the poverty, people who are living under the poverty, we wanted to raise and then want to give them decent living standard. But the others on the middle income, they are trapped actually.
Right.
They do not get any like a wage increment. No, most like they only will enjoy like some kind of like a wage increment if the company, any particular company, have such policy. So there is no way like automatic, like a wage adjustment is happening to this group. And it is a problem. It is a problem. And that's also create a lot huge, like unhappiness to this group. This is more like how do you demand better? How do you have bargaining power better? So this is the real need of like a unionization is coming here, you know? So that you create a system. How do you bargain like a yearly increase? Like it will be in your collective agreement if you have such system, but we do not have. We are expecting to have a law in a wage adjustment. I think that's another level of a fight law. That's another level of fight we need to do. Are the people ready? The middle income people ready to go with this fight and then get all these things? Or do we think like we cannot go on with this fight all the time? The only way we can get throughout in our life is get unionized, get our rights, let's demand what we are up to, okay, with some kind of like power from the bottom. That should be even for the minimum wage, living wage, we are advocating for that because it's not sustainable. How long you can go with this living wage, minimum wage act, because there's going to be a lot of pushback with a lot of employers and the investors. So the only way, the sustainable way for long run is make the power into the people who can demand better.
Alex, how do you contend with this very important point that Jani brought up, which is that in a proper system, or one would hope that when you increase the wages at right at the bottom, the minimum wage, the wages were going to go up across the board. And then probably it's the board of directors and you know, that's where they are going to lose out. But across the board, you're going to see an increment. But Jani brings up a very important point that in Malaysia, you increase the minimum wage, but those earning 4,000, 5,000, you know, those middle income wages, people in the lower tier of the professional class and whatever, they don't see their wages increment. And then that brings about unhappiness. And then now you see working class people are just arguing with each other when they're supposed to be banded together, right?
First and foremost, I do agree with Jenny, right? Solidarity and unity is very important. Yeah. However, on the other hand, right, when I look at your question, I believe that your background also economics, yeah. Probably you may learn about this, what we call Adam Smith's theory, the wealth of the nation, how the invisible hands actually function, and what motivate people want to earn more. So if you look at, for example, we can take some example of those Bangladeshi people, they are able to earn 4,000, 5,000 ringgit. Besides working, they are also doing the part-time job. And then that is actually the act of the invisible hand. So at the same time of fighting for the livable wage itself, there should be another alternative as well in actually in creating wealth through your initiative and through your what we call through your innovation as well. The innovation and the skill is very important.
So just to respond and put it on the record because you brought it up, my background is in economics, it's media and journalism, but I'm flattered that you think my background is economics. I read a lot of books on political economy. Now, Alex, you brought up Adam Smith and tied it to how individuals have done second jobs and side hustles and, you know, made a name for themselves or built their wealth, you know, brought themselves out of poverty. I'm more of a Marx guy myself who thinks it should be, you know, from each according to their ability to each according to their needs, which means everyone contributes based on their capacity and everybody is in society's basic needs will be covered. Quality, affordable public housing, healthcare, education, water, electricity, transportation, public transportation for everyone. Hard work and innovation is important, right? I don't think it's a question of one or the other. But don't people need to be able to live with dignity simply by working 8 hours a day, 5 days a week?
Actually, yes. I'm also a feminist Marxist. That's why I always emphasize that education is very important, skill is very important. But however, the government has a role to ensure that there's a livable wage. By this, what we call the low-wage earner. Like, for example, when you look at the what we call our social engineering program, yeah, like the new economic policy itself, it is a very idealistic, very good. But if you look at the result, after the Tun Razak introduced in the 70s up to now, it's already almost 60 years. Where are we now? We are still living under the subsidy and all this thing. That means there is something wrong somewhere within our socioeconomic development as well as our policy matter. So as what I do agree with Jenny, just like mentioning about like you mentioned about so many 3R issue and all this sort of thing. But are we able to be united? Like what Jenny said, we need to be united to up enhance our people. But my approach is actually more like we don't beg for it. We show to them that they need us. We are actually trapped in the labor-intensive economy. And then the other part is actually we also have to look into the Anwar's dilemma because he inherited the 1.6 million civil servant. If you look at the civil servant per citizen's ratio, right, we are the highest in the world. Yeah, are they able to produce the required services to enhance our government administration? Are they really innovative enough to create value? And all this sort of thing, that is actually very crucial. So if you are not able to get out from the labor-intensive, what we call framework itself, we are going to trap there. I do agree with Janice because this country anyway is made up of the people of various class, but the majority are actually trapped in this type of environment that they have no way out. And then this is very important that actually continuous innovation, continuous increase of the upskilling, education, that is very crucial. I think it is very important that we don't just look at the, what we call the male dominant. We also have to enhance the female worker itself. If you look at the gig economy itself, is one of the biggest component of the contribution of the female what we call enterprising people. So as far as this is concerned, exactly, my suggestion is always look beyond just the wage, but try to be better, try to improve your livelihood by creating something which is actually additional value that you can definitely excel in your life.
Before we end this conversation, would each of you have a final message from me on what the new minimum wage should be, starting with you, Jenny?
People always argue over the GDP in the country, or how was the GDP in the country, whether we are we doing well or not, or because we are not doing well, that's why we are not afford to give higher wages to the workers. Huh? But we must also see the statistic in our country. Let's look back in 1970, what was our GDP? At that time, our GDP level is only about 11.8 billion. Okay, now we have over 50 years. Our GDP have grown like now 1,513 million. So the GDP has grown so big in 50 years. And after we take into account about the adjustment of the inflation and about all these things, we have about decently, like we have about 520% increase over this period. We have seen like the GDP actually increased 24 times higher than the wage increase in the country in this duration. You know, the wage increase only about 1.4 times increased. So you see the disparity, you know, the income and the wages that the workers are earning in this country. So we are not really a poor country. We are doing well. But make sure your people in the country living well, having a good, decent wage. That should be the way that you show to other countries, like, hey, we are doing well. It's not because of the big buildings, but because we take care of the people. We do not put people in the poverty. We make sure their decent life is taken care of. So I think this is the strong message that we are expecting the Anwar government will take it up and will really like implement it and will really like think about bringing a decent living wage for the workers in Malaysia who have really working hard on every day to make this country prosperous. So we can't take all their energy, all their tenaga buruh. Now we are saying, hey, sorry, you are not entitled to get the wage increase. We see, like I can take, because I'm closely working with cleaners, I can easily can tell about this cleaners' wages compared to what the Australia is giving and what Malaysia is giving for the same work. What kind of productivity you want to evaluate for the cleaning? So there is no productivity measure you can really like think about for the cleaning work, you know. So when Australia can pay like 11,000 per month for a cleaner, we are paying about 1,500 for a cleaner, which is most of the cleaners also still not get their 1,500 because of our enforcement is so bad. So this is where we are, you know, when we talk about like a skill and we talk about the productivity, the value of labor is so badly valued in Malaysia. So we really hope like Malaysia will take into account the new prime minister who really fight, like who really talks about eradicating hardcore poverty, should really come up with a decent living wage to Malaysia. And of course, PSM call is 2000. We really like waiting to see what's going to happen. And we are happy to take part in the process because they usually, they will call various stakeholders to come together and to discuss about this review of the minimum wage. And we are eagerly waiting to get involved in the discussion and to raise all these points.
Alex?
What I would say is actually like, I would like to adopt the what we call the scheme of this Samdabi plantation. Basically, minimum wage, we go according to the what we call grow according to the to the consumer price index, and then of course it must be reasonable, and then must have some form of what we call remuneration to these minimum wage people to the livable situation. If you look at the Samdabi what we call plantations model, they pay 1,500. When you achieve this particular productivity, beyond that, you will receive how many percent of the incentive there. I think quite a big number of Sandabi plantation worker, they earn more than 4,000 ringgit, minimum 3,500. I think that will also not actually put too much pressure on the employer. At the same time, it also will try to reward the what we call the worker with the additional productivity that they have created in terms of value. I think that will be probably, of course, the other part which I mentioned earlier, the government actually imposed the increment of SST. Where is this money going to? Should it be redistributed to the working class of the lower income group? So I think that will be probably the best solution that if I'm in the administration, Anwar administration, probably this will be the best approach. If you cannot satisfy them with this, what we call minimum wage, you must compensate them and remedy their livelihood thing. I think that's my takeaway for this.
And on that note, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Dasha.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
I've been speaking to Alex Ong, labour rights activist and the Malaysian coordinator of migrant care, as well as Sivaranjani Manikam, National Workers Bureau coordinator at Parti Socialist Malaysia. I'm Dasran Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.